My name is Louis Thomas, and I'm here with Val Jensen, and we're here to talk about Mary Thomas and what impact she had on her life. Val, could you give me just a little bio about yourself?
Hi, Louis. Yes, my name is Val Jensen, and when I met Mary, I was a student of archaeology. Now I work doing environmental management on a golf course. We also worked with Mary and conducted tours for school-aged children at the Kingfisher Environmental Interpretive Center, which was another one of Mary Thomas's projects.
But you always seem to pop in and out of her life, and could you tell me a little more about it?
Yes. Well, I was so fortunate that when I first met Mary, it was at a presentation that she was doing at the university. And it was in one of my anthropology classes, and I had never met her before, but she was just an incredible woman. She would speak in front of a room of people and just captivate them, and I was one of those people that was absolutely captivated by her. And very fortunate that she liked me too, and we worked together for years and years, and she honored me by adopting me into her family and teaching me her culture.
She was one of those that were a real gifted speaker. Did you ever notice that about her?
She was just amazing. She could take a crowd of people and just make them mesmerized. She could take people from all walks of life and talk to them just as if they were her family. And at the end of it all, they were just completely wrapped around her little finger.
You spent a lot of time with her, say, even out with some of her forays out in the bush. Can you tell me a little about that?
I did. That was one of our favorite times together, or some of our favorite times together. She liked to go for walks in the forest, and there wasn't a plant that she walked over that she didn't know the use of and the name of, and whether it was a food or whether it was a medicine or whether it had a story connected. So we spent a lot of time learning. I spent a lot of time learning. She spent a lot of time teaching in the forests, and we spent a lot of time doing just that.
You know, you talk about some of her friends and, you know, the interaction with other people. How do you feel? Did you ever notice how she did it?
Well, she, like I said, she just captivated people. She had a way with people, and she made us all feel like we were so important. And I think that is such a gift. People just, that's something you're born with. I don't think that you can be taught. And she had a way with people that, even though she spoke of things like, for instance, the residential school, when she spoke about the residential school, she did it in such a gentle way, and she was so soft-spoken that you always felt like you were part of her story. So she had a magic way with people.
She did leave a legacy, and I was wondering what type of legacy did she really leave?
I think what she gave the world was interaction. She made us all feel like we were part of the bigger picture. She never drew lines between cultures or families. She always included. She was very inclusive. So I think she left so many of us with her story, her experiences, and she once told me that she was intent on building bridges between cultures, and all of the people that she taught and all of the people that she adopted into her family were her bridges, and that's what she left. She left those bridges and teachers.
Thank you, Val.
What kind of spiritual understandings did they come to? What kinds of realizations did they make about themselves, about their relationship to the spiritual world and the material world around them? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What did they come back with as a result of that?
I guess let me use the old fellow for, I felt that was really educational. The way the old man from Alkali Lake explained the spiritual, a lot of people seem to think that you can come back with a vision. But the old man said, no, not necessarily a vision. But what you're after is the inner strength, but you have to purify yourself. That's when they go out to do their thing, eh? You go on a fast and...
How long would you fast?
Like the old man says, you fast for 4 days. That's the beginning. Mm-hmm. You fast for 4 days. It doesn't matter what you do. The sun dance, they fast for 4 days. Mm-hmm. Everything they try at is 4 days of fasting. And the only thing they take is water. Mm-hmm. And because water is one of the most, I guess, a symbol of cleansing and strength, eh? Like you take water. Water is powerful. It can move boulders, it can move a mountainside, and yet it's so gentle. That is why they use the water as a symbol when they do their cleansing and fasting. They fast and they only drink water, and not too much of it either. After 4 days, and all that time they are fasting, they are dropping everything of earthly feelings or earthly material things, and they're just sending their mind up there to the spirit world. And the way the old man explained it on Sunday was, everybody that has passed away, their spirit is there. We are down here. We cannot see them, but they can see us. They can hear us. And when you want to get that powerful inner strength, you deprive your body of all material things, food, clothing, anything. And you just concentrate on your mind to get that powerful strength from your Creator. And he said, like, that was the nicest explanation I've ever heard coming from a real elder. And he said, like, the drum is the symbol of our heartbeat. When you beat that drum, you get that feeling, you know, that your heart is the most important thing. You can love, you can hate with your heart, and it keeps you alive. When that stops, you're dead. So when the drum beats, it's the symbol of your heartbeat. And when you want that spiritual power, you want to know who you are, that is the first thing you have to do, is that fasting and going to the water. You're swimming. You do your morning swimming and at night.
At night too?
Mm-hmm.
So before the sun goes up and after the sun goes down?
What he referred to was just as the dawn is breaking, that's the breaking of a new day. That's when you go and cleanse, you swim. And in the evening, when the sun sets and the dusk is just starting to come in, that's the finish of this one day, and night is coming, that's when you rest. And then again in the morning, and that's when you swim, right at dusk, just when it's starting to get dark.
This is for girls as well as boys.
Mm-hmm. But the main thing is if you are just looking for inner strength, these are the things that you go through. And on top of that, when you get up in the morning, before you go do your swim, that's when they do the sacred station with smudge.
Okay, what's that? I don't know that.
That is getting to be quite a regular thing among all our native people. The prairie people use sweetgrass.
Oh,
around here we use either the cedar boughs, dried cedar boughs, or the
sage.
And they put it in a little dish and they burn it and it smokes. And when you go to use it, you're praying all the time to the Creator for strength. And when they give you that smudge, you take a handful and you go like this. Give me strength.
On your
head. Put it in my brain that I will be able to think clearly. And then you take another and you put it on your ears. Purify my ears that I will hear only what is good. And then you take another and you put it over your eyes and you say, purify my eyes that I will see only what is good. And then you do also with your mouth that I will only speak what is good. And then another one goes to your heart. Fill my heart with love and good things. Take all evil out of my heart. And then from there you start, like if you're bathing in it, purify my body, and you go down to your legs and all around your back.
Would this be before you went into the water?
Before you, that is the purification, the very first thing, yeah.
Was that traditional, Shushma? That was traditional?
Yes, Shushma, it's well. Traditional with all nature. And the thing that amazed me, this old man said that he had gone to California, he'd been far back as Halifax and around through the prairies, and all those traditional symbols are the same, only using different things of what Mother Nature had to offer. So in the Shuswap area, we use the sage or the dried cedar boughs, but that is the very first thing you do.
The cedar boughs, not the bark, but the boughs.
No, the boughs. You'll dry them and crumble them and use that for smudge.
Okay.
And after that purification, praying all the time, then you do your swimming. And when you go to swim, you don't just jump in the water. You have to go and you take the little boughs from the fir tree, the ends, and you take a bunch of them and you use that as you would a face cloth. You rub yourself all over with it. And you know the little needles come up and they stick to your body all over. And when you go into the water, you dive upstream, and all that just washes off, and it just floats away. Mm. And you're talking to the water as you're washing these little leaves off of me, these two symbols. So wash all evil, my body, my mind, and you dive in that water.
So these are the kinds of prayers that you're saying.
Yes. And then you have, like, the sweat is another. Mm-hmm. In order to be pure, they believe in the sweat. They have different ways of doing the sweat. There's a sweat for like strength and purification. They call the grandmother sweat. Mm. And that faces to the morning where the sun comes up. You face your sweat that way. That's grandmother sweat. And then they have what they call the
man's... Excuse me, Mary, would that be alone? Would you be doing that alone, or would you be doing it with other women?
Breath, if you're doing your own spirit cleansing, you do it alone. And you do so many, like, there are different traditional methods in the sweat. Some of them use so many rocks to their sweat.
So many, like a specific number, 7?
Yeah, 8, or some go as far as 32. And each amount of rocks resembles, it's a gift from your elders that you're using. You have to earn that, whatever rocks you're using, eh? And
So let's say a young woman was out on her spirit quest. How many would she use in her sweat?
If it's just a young woman, they start with their own, like maybe say anywhere from 8 to 12. Excuse me. And as you go along, you increase that, because the more rocks you have in your sweat, the hotter it is. And
that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
And when you're beginning in the sweat, you have to get accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. Some people get deathly sick from it. And as your inner strength and your body begins to adjust to it, then your sweat gets hotter and hotter. And you know, when you go in the sweat, your body sweats, and if you rub yourself, it really takes all everything off of you. You just come out as clean as can be. Thank you. You come out as clean as can be, and then you go and jump in that cold water.
I know, I've done it at Round Lake. It's really quite an experience.
But that in itself is inner strength. You have to really want to do it.
Right.
You don't go in there just for the fun of it and get anything out of it.
So what do you think when you're in there? Like, the only times I've done sweats, somebody else has been leading the sweat, and so they've said the prayers and you know, they've gone around and told us what to say and that sort of thing. But what if you're doing it yourself? What do you think about? What do you?
Well, it depends on yourself. Like, you know, we're always struggling for strength within ourselves, because without the strength, you're nobody. Anything comes along will sway you. It's always inner power that you're praying for. That you do the right things in life, that you're not easily taken in by alcohol or anything that'll make a bad person out of you, eh? So that's the inner strength, the cleanliness of your body and your spirit. You think of that first, and then you pray for strength, and after you're all cleansed, then your strength is... Give me the strength. The way we do it now, you have to go to psychiatrist to sort out your mind, and you're still weak even after you come out of the psychiatrist's office, eh? You could have as many visits with a psychiatrist if you haven't got the willpower. Now, that sweat and swimming in ice cold water, that gives you you have to have a lot of willpower to do that. And you have to really want it. So when you're praying for strength, you're praying for that, your body and soul, your spirit to be clean, that you may be able to get that power to. And I can honestly say I wouldn't be able to get that from any other ethnic group that I've known about. Only the native people have that.
Did you just sweat that from out here?
No.
They don't do anything. Well, it's a powerful thing.
It is. You know, you get sort of transformed when you go into a sweat. Because you're not just walking in there just merely to clean your body and sweat, eh? Mm-hmm. You go in a sweat with that in your mind. You're going to go in there, you're going to pray. I want my body, my mind, my soul to be purified. And when that is purified, I will be praying for strength to walk that road, that tight rope, eh?
Now, help me understand. What my sense was that when we were, that this whole creator thing becomes problematic. When we were doing sweats, there was a sense of people praying to a source of power. But it didn't seem like the Western concept of a god, sort of someone peering down. It seemed to be more of a force that you were going to become a part of. Is that, how do you understand that?
To me, it's... It's kind of hard to explain for me, because we feel like the native people, you talk to a lot of elders, they all believe there is a creator that they call the higher power. I don't know, we say it in our language, you know, higher power is, we have chiefs here, and there is a chief overlooking us.
Okay.
And that is where our dead people, the spirit world, that's where our dead people go.
Do you think of that actually as a person?
A person like our fathers and grandfathers that have passed away, they amalgamate into this spirit world. That's what we think of.
So it's sort of the souls, the wisdom of all the past. And that's why you say all my relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you say, all my relations when you enter the sweat?
All my relations, yes. You ask the spirits of your elders and all the people that passed away, you ask them to come down and guide you and guard you over the sweat, and you invite them to come in with you in spirit. Because without the spirit world, it's total darkness. This is what our people believe in. It's total darkness. You're lost. But you have to have that spirit world and the higher power to give you the strength to be a person, you know, that is not weak. You have to be strong. And this is why they tell us you cannot indulge in too much food or any earthly, like when a person wants to go through that cleansing period, sex is something they, it's taboo. You totally are not allowed that if you want to go into your cleansing and sweats.
And how long a period would this be? I mean, in the old days, it was 4 months or so, wasn't it?
Well, it even went as far as a year.
For the girls, too?
Oh, definitely, really? Yeah. Okay. It even went as far as a year. In fact, it was encouraged to really get that inner strength.
Right.
You had to tolerate the cold as well as the hot. And you went away for a whole year.
Well, listen, things are speeding up these days. I don't have a year. I've only got a month, so I have... You don't have to do it in a month.
No, they claim the longer you go away, the stronger person you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, fear is something that the native people, they prepared you when you were little.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they prepared you never to fear pain or any kind of hurts. I guess the only fear they ever had was a sense of failure. That was the dreaded thing, is to be able to fail. If you came back, you went hunting and you came back without a deer, you know, you felt that sense of failure, you failed your people. So whatever they taught you when you're growing, you have to really learn it. And going hunting, you just didn't get up in the morning, have a big breakfast, put your gun on your back and went out. No, that people got up in the morning, the first thing they did was jump in the lake or river, whatever, and wash their bodies before they went swimming. You didn't just go up and hunt a deer with your hands dirty and your mind, your body dirty. You went cleansed, because they believed that the animal world, even though they can't talk, they believe the trees even communicated. I hear now they're talking about, the scientists are saying that the trees do communicate.
Yeah.
Well, the Indians knew that long time ago. If my mother went to pick medicine from a tree, she's going to scrape the bark or else break branches. She always talked to that particular tree. Ask the tree to excuse her, but this creator placed you here that we take of you our medicine. And excuse me, but I need this bark to use as my medicine.
So one of the things I read, it was talking about stripping away your ego, getting down to your core. And this is the only way that you could become one with the spirit world, to sort of... Does that make any sense to you, to sort of strip away all the stuff that's accumulated?
Yes. Like, you remember, I think I told you that one time. They used to, the girls, when they went out to do their cleansing, or even the boys, they would drink lots of water, just pour down as much water as they could, and they would run, and then they'd take a bit of the new shoot of a rose bush. They'd break it and bend it, one that hasn't got the little thorns on it, and they'd induce vomiting.
Oh, I do remember you mentioning that. Yeah.
Remember that?
To cleanse themselves. Yeah.
Yes, they cleaned their inside as well as the outside.
Would this be done while they were fasting?
Yes, while they were fasting.
Would they eat for 4 days and then stop for 4 days? Was it sort of four-day kind of a...
No, you're going to go and do your cleansing. They made you drink a lot of broth, deer broth or fish broth or boiled bird broth. You drank a lot of broth. And there's no solids, eh? Just strictly broth for maybe 2 or 3 days. And then you went into your fast. And there was no solids in here. You're just strictly fluid.
Right. So it wouldn't be any good to vomit then. There would be nothing to vomit up.
Yeah, but they figure they clean you right up. And you drank water. No solids whatsoever.
So that's when they would do the vomiting, during this cleansing?
They would clean right out.
Just to get you just right down to the core, right?
Yes. And you know, when you break the body down, They claim that's when, the old people used to say, that's when your mind opens. You begin to realize that, you know, how weak you are. That's why that fasting was a very effective way of treating a person, to get their inner strength, is by depriving yourself of food and any pleasures, earthly pleasures.
So what would that realization feel like? What kind of an awareness would come to you as you fasted? And what kind of new understandings of yourself would you make?
Like I said, you know, you realize it, you know it by praying hard. It's really hard to explain in words. I don't know how a Christian you are.
I have a Christian background, but I'm not a practicing Christian.
If you're a practicing Christian, when you're down in the dumps and you feel you hit bottom, and if you put your strength, if you ask for inner strength, wisdom from your spirit, say like God, eh? We're talking to God, give me strength to get out of this. You get that feeling of uplifting. You become a different person. Mm-hmm. And your mind is clear, you know, what is it that I'm doing wrong, that the reason why I'm down? Now, to practice the Indian way, you go into it with a desire first. You can't go and do your thing if you don't feel you need it. So you have to have the desire, you have to know you're going to have to do it. Now, it's very hard for a young woman, a young man now to realize this, because they're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is prepared this day and age.
Yeah.
A long time ago, before the coming of the white man, my mother used to say that you started preparing the child right from birth, teaching them discipline. And the way they did it at birth was the shock treatment. As soon as the baby's born, they bath them in cold water, and you shock the baby. And then the baby's bound up in a cradle, and it's disciplined right away. The baby in his mother's womb is kicking in every direction and is free to move about, you know. But once they're born, they're laced in a little cradle, and they're learning discipline number one right away. They no longer can kick around, move around. They cry for 2 or 3 days, but they soon get used to it. And they won't go back to sleep until you bound them up again. And then all the training from the time they're little till they get to a certain age, and then the grandparents said, it's time for you to go out there. They prepared them. But now I hear a lot of young people saying, oh, I smoked a dope, I drank, since I was 8 years old I've been drinking. Experimenting with alcohol. When my dad and them get drunk, they pass out. I sneak away with some bottles of beer, and me and my buddies, we drink it. And when they get a little older, they begin to get the idea that somewhere along the line something hits them, that they want to become different. They realize they're destroying themselves. You're finding that more and more. At that conference, how many times that was brought up from those young people?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make with this book, and that they can find that strength not by looking to television programs and material, you know, stuff, but they can find it in their own tradition.
And where a lot of them said they found it was through the drums and singing.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. Would somebody on a retreat of this sort have a drum? Would they sing?
The drum is a must.
And you're talking about it as a heartbeat, so you think about it as a heartbeat. Would it synchronize with your heart?
No, it's... But you know, I don't know how it affects you. Like, as a native person, I hear drums in an orchestra, big bang, bang, bang. It doesn't do anything to me. But if I hear an Indian drum, the minute it hits, I get chills. And then as I go along, it lifts me. And God, I just want to get up there and Indian dance. It does something to me because I understand that there's a communication between that drum and me. It belongs to me, and I love it. It just makes me different. I feel light. I feel good. Now, when the drums were taken away from us, it was taboo, eh? We would go for 6 months hard labor. We drummed one time not too long ago. Government put a ban to it. But now that the drums are coming back, a lot of our young people are taking interest in it. And they claim it does the same to them as it does to me because of their native, you know, blood in them.
When did they take the drums away?
During the potlatch period, when they were, people were getting thrown, and that was in the early 1900s and late 1800s. If you were caught holding a potlatch, it's, you know, an Indian powwow. The ones that put that potlatch on were taken by the Department of Indian Affairs and the Royal Mounted Police and thrown in jail for 6 years, 6 months hard labor.
What were the drums like at that time? Were they the flat drum you pulled like this? It's round like this, or the ones that you throw like this?
No, around here it was the drum with a straps in the back.
Did you have it like that?
Yeah, and
individual. One side.
Mm-hmm. The big ones are prairie. Cymbals.
So the old drums from here, you put it this way.
Yeah, and you hold it and you beat it with the other hand.
Yes.
But it does something. I don't know how to explain it, but to me as a native person, the minute I hear that Indian drum, it just makes me different. I feel kind of light. I feel good. And I just want to get out there and just dance, eh? And I can hear a drum in a group like, you know, some white people orchestra. It hasn't got the same effect. So I can imagine what it's doing to the Indians' children. And that's a lot of communities are training their children. Alkali Lake, they have sweats for the old people, they have sweats for the teenagers. They have sweats from different age groups, right down to four-year-olds even going sweats.
Is that right? Are they segregated by sex? Are there men and women separate?
Yeah, the women have their own and the men have their own. They have their leaders that put them through the sweats.
Do you speak
Shuswap? Me, I speak Shuswap, yeah.
Do you say Shuswap or Shuswap?
We call it Shuswap. Well, that Shuswap is Shuswap. You know, that's the first time I...
How do you pronounce it? What's the real...
Shuswapink.
That's the correct
one. Shuswapink. Mm-hmm, Shuswapink. It's got a W on the end,
Shuswapink.
Yeah.
What is the word for wish or desire, to wish or desire something? Is that more of a French or another word? You have to say, I wish or I desire something. I can't just say, I desire.
It would depend on what you're wishing for. If I said, I wish I had some water, let's say, I wish I had some water, I would have to say, or if I said, give me a word, sentence.
I wish for strength.
If I wish for strength, that would have to be included in a long sentence. You can. There's words. There are different words that you can say just in short sentence, and there are different. How do you put it? Desire-like.
Mm-hmm.
That would have to be. Now, what I would say if I was praying for strength, I wouldn't say I wish. The way it would come out was, I'm sort of begging, give me strength. There is no, I wish for strength. I wouldn't be able to say it that way. I would say, give me the strength.
Right, I'm pleading,
I'm
begging.
Yeah.
That
a wish is
so important. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the songs. What songs would you sing?
Songs were mostly individual songs. People saying that while they were doing their fasting and they were out and they had a dream of a certain thing coming to them. Like, say, my aunt, for instance, she was the oldest of the four children. My aunt and then her two brothers, and my mother was the youngest. I guess her father sent her away for a whole her year. He's gone. And she claims that she heard the loon singing to her. And she seen herself by this lake way up in the mountain. She wasn't there in person. It was her spirit went out. And she said that she was by this lake and said that water was just blue and the loon was up there by itself, just swimming around. And she's sitting there, said this moss is so soft and you can't hear yourself walking. If you take a little stone and throw it in, she said, you can hear it. And this was in her dream and she felt like she's really there. She remembers every little thing, every little plant around her. And the loon got out of the water and it was splashing around. All of a sudden it started talking to her and told her that if any time you feel lonely, you feel like nothing is going right for you, sing my song. And she said when she come out of it like a trance, when she come out of it, that song just stayed with her, and she just kept singing it all the time.
What would it have, would it have words, specific words?
They sing the tune, the tune, but they don't put words into it. But they copied it with their dancing. That's where the hand emotions come in. Mm-hmm. All their emotions with their hands.
Can you give me an example of a song, like a typical song that you sung with a drum?
Well, how do you mean?
Like, can you? Because the ones I've heard are more like chants. They don't have specific words so much, as you say, just the sounds. But what would a person, like, I'm thinking again about a young person who was out on a retreat. How would they know what to sing? Would it come to them in a dream?
It would have to come to
otherwise
them.
Otherwise they wouldn't have it.
No. All the songs that I've known, I've heard, belonged to some. You'll hear people saying, this is the song that my uncle or my grandfather or somebody in the family knew and had saved. There's a lot of different songs, and they always relate back to, this is what my aunt or my uncle or my grandfather or my grandmother sang it, and they sort of inherit it, and they sing it.
Can you sing one like that?
Well, the one my aunt sang, she told me about it one time, and I've always kind of liked to remember it, eh? And I've never heard anybody else sing it. I've listened to a lot of songs, and that one that my aunt sang to me, I've always kept it in my mind, eh? Every once in a while I'll hum it.
What's the tune? How does it go?
It starts with, I don't know if I can sing very good, my darn cold, my throat and my chest hurts. Like it says, oh, said when she was out there for pretty near a year, she had this, that she thought she was sleeping, and yet she just felt when she come to her, she was numb. She must have been a sort of a trance-like. She was so tired, just sat down to rest, and everything just came to her.
And that was the song she learned.
And I've never heard anybody else sing it, just her. And I guess I'm the only one that she related that song to, and I've kept it. Very seldom I've sing it.
I appreciate that. I think I sense that.
It does something to me. It makes me want to cry or I feel happy. I get a mixed emotion when I sing it.
For me, it does what so many things, that when you're with an Indian person who's really genuinely practicing spirituality explaining it. It really makes me feel like I'm transported to another time, mm-hmm. another way of seeing things, another world, you know? I mean, like, just the sounds of it are so different from anything.
Yeah.
And
you know something my mother and my aunt told me to do when I get really, things seem to just get me down? My aunt used to tell me, when you can't seem to sort out your mind, you just get so you just wade. She said, Mother Earth is your mother. She said, you look at a little child when they're frustrated, they're angry, nothing seems to go wrong. They climb up on their mother's lap and they pound on their mother, they pull her hair and they'll, you know, want to scratch mother, and mother just hold that baby. She knows that baby's frustrated, and you know, she's rocking it. And that little baby will just practically pull her apart. Finally, it gets it all out of its system. And that baby gets okay, feels better, then it runs in place. That do likewise, that when you feel that everything is going wrong for you, go away from everybody and go out in the bushes, way far away. If there's a river, a creek by, or a lake, go near there and get down on the ground and just pull on the grass or sticks, whatever, and just take it all out on them. You see, you can dig in that ground, you can do it, and just get that frustration. He said, have a good cry. Just cry. Let it all out. And when you feel you can't cry anymore, then go to the water. The water is so gentle, it washes. Go and get in that water, except you'll see when you come back, you'll feel better. Many times I've done it. Like where I live, there's a creek right on the property. I just walk away from everything and I go way up on the hill. And it overlooks the valley, just beautiful. And I sit there and I'm just lonely because nothing seems to be going right, and I just sit up there and I cry. I sit on that rock and I'm beating the heck out of that old rock and my hand gets so sore and, you know, and you just get it out of you. And you listen, and then when you listen, here is the little birds. Squirrel is sitting up on a tree just scolding you. If you really know how to listen, you can hear the wind just going through the needles in the tree. You can almost hear the trees whispering at you. And it just transforms you into another person. And then I begin to look around. I see the beautiful little plants. How beautiful the world is, and here, what's the matter with me?
You're out of tune.
Yes. And that's what it's all about. You've got to be close to Mother Nature. And that strength that comes from the higher power is the rays of the sun, the wind, the rain. A lot of people say, oh, this doggone rain. Nothing wrong with the rain. The earth needs it, the plants need it. All we have to do is just put something over our head so you don't get your head wet.
What's the relationship between the Creator and Mother Earth? What are they? How are they similar? Are they reflections of one another, or are they separate?
Well, according to the old people, some of them call the Creator Grandfather, some call it Grandmother.
Call the Creator Grandmother?
Yeah, a lot of them call it Grandfather, old Grandfather. So Earth is your mother, that's what feeds you.
So Earth was Grandmother and the Creator was Grandfather?
Father, yeah, that's a way, a lot of ways that a lot of people have related to it as the Mother Earth. You come out of Mother, like, you know, the Mother Earth feeds you. And when you die, you go back into her bosom. You're buried in that Mother Earth. And your spirit goes up to old Grandfather. I listen to them old people talk about it, and at the time when I was young, it just didn't seem to make too much sense, because I wanted to be a white lady.
No, white lady's going to
be. You know, because yeah, I went to school, and there they told us to be Indian was something to be ashamed of, and we got whipped something cruel.
Did your parents have to go to school as well?
Not my mother, no, but they were taught at on the reserve by the missionaries, but mostly religion.
Are your grandparents doing
anything? I lived with my grandma. Oh, I loved that old gal. We used to stay in a little one-room shack with dirt roof, and she would have one corner was her bed. It was just pegged down with boards and filled with straw. Usually that meadow hay with a lot of mint in it. And she'd put a piece of canvas over it and then her quilts, and that's where we laid. And she would massage our heads like this and tell us stories till we fell asleep. Little myths, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She'd tell us stories, and then each one had a little lesson to it. And she would tell us stories till we fell asleep. Oh, I used to love that in her warm little cabin. I learned a lot from her. We used to go out and do a lot of material gathering, food gathering, and preparing it. We'd take part in everything she did. And when I went to school, things changed. And that story almost reminds me of me. I left the reserve thinking there was something great out there. And I've made that circle, now I'm right back to the reserve again. And I didn't think it was so great out there, things I learned. And the thing that gave me strength was getting back into my Indian way of thinking, in a way, Indian crafts and the culture. I had to study it all over again. I was fortunate. I was able to speak the language. I was able to converse with them and learn all the things from them. In fact, it has, I think what really, like, I used to drink and smoke quite a bit one time in my life, eh? And that's when I thought I was a beautiful white lady. After learning about my Indian culture, when I got that desire, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to know. And when I started talking to the old people, it seemed like they had that special thing about them that I was traveled all over looking for. Here it was right at home, and I didn't realize it till I did my, I guess, look for my quest or whatever.
I've got to clarify one other thing. When you, what you learned about spirits, and I guess on your quest, would you learn that you are separate from these spirits?
You have to be one
with that spirit. What about all the other spirits around you? The spirit of the trees, the spirit of the earth itself, the spirit of the fire, the spirit of the rocks. Would you come to see that you're one of those spirits? That you're...
I guess you'd say yes in a way, but there's a strong one. The one that you always relate back to is through that song that you've learned. Because that particular thing, like a lot of them even say that they, the old people used to say, some of them had different animal spirits, yes, or conversed with different animals, others with birds, others with,
right,
some form of rock or something. And like you see on those rock faces, say all the drawings, that's part of their spiritual quest.
Sure. And when they learned that, to speak with the spirits, to speak with the animals, were they learning that they themselves were a part of that spirit world? That they were they finding the spirit inside themselves, or were they finding some spirit outside of themselves? That's what I'm trying to understand. Does that make sense to you? I mean, I guess my sense of it is that they were really finding that they themselves were a part of that spirit world. That maybe the first time they were seeing their own inner spirit, their own true spirit.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that one. There's a lot of things that my elders told me that even myself is pretty hard to explain.
What's the Shuswap word for reflection? Like if you saw yourself in a mirror?
Smirkot, yeah. That's a hard one.
Yeah. Does that mean anything? Like if you were going to say that, does that mean anything in itself, or does it just mean reflection?
Just a reflection. Just a reflection. You can see it in the water, that they often refer to that. If you stand there and you see your reflection in the water, you're smokopia. You know, if you're standing there and you're in the water, you're shadow.
How did you say it again, Mary?
Smelkwepia. Smelkwep, yeah.
Boy, it's hard. The sounds.
They have really bad. You can throw some of them way back here. And smell, yeah. Yeah. Got it. Smell, but yeah. I know our people really never like to cut anything down that was green, a live tree or anything.
Yeah.
They have no need for it anyway.
Yeah,
it's
like
doing it. Yeah, all they used was ones, mm-hmm, that the winds had fallen, you know, the wind falls, that's all they were needed.
What a difference.
That's why, you know, all these darn logging companies are having a hard time to understand the hurts that these old people are experiencing. Those islands, sacred islands. Mm-hmm. And they're going in there like McMillan Blodell on Mirrors Island, and now there's another Charles island, yeah, that the magistrate said he had no, he sympathizes with them, but it's not in his jurisdiction to stop them logging.
It's a mile out. And now they're going to start logging the Stein River Valley, which is the sacred valley in the Thompsons,
yeah,
where most of the young people went and did their spirit quest. Let's go logging.
And they say that the jobs are going to be no more. What kind of jobs will there be when there's really no more trees? There's still going to be no more jobs then. No, a lot of these places are, like you take around, you go into Sycamus and you go around the lake, that Marble Point, I think they call it now. There's a rock face over there that's got a lot of, we call it Malmaleska. That's what we used to call it, and that's where a lot of our people went.
For their spirit quest.
But that's been chipped away. Somebody's been trying to take them.
No kidding.
It's just been totally destroyed. It's protected, but you know what people are like today. You can protect your store window, they'll come along and bust it on you. There's just no values anymore, and here our people, you know, they put a lot of value to those things.
Are people a reflection of the Creator?
That's what I was asking about, that word reflection. Are they a reflection of the Creator?
As people down here?
Yeah. Are you a reflection of the Creator?
Not until you passed into their spirit world, and that's the only time you're referred to as in the spirit world. But as a person down here, you're like the... That's why they say the animals are your brothers and sisters. You know, you don't go hitting your brother or your sister. You respect them. And the Indian people respected the animals, the birds, the fish and the water, the trees. We respected everything. That was our brothers and sisters.
Because we all had a common spirit?
Yes, because we were all common earthly people. The only time you became a different person is when you died, your body goes into Mother Earth, and your spirit goes to the Creator up in the spirit world.
So when you're developing your spirit, you mentioned at the beginning...
Oops.
That the...
I wonder if we're looking for the key
are.
To the...
They have to go...
Oh, dear.
You have to go... Just, like, when you develop your spirit... You were talking about you go out to find your spirit, to replenish your spirit, to strengthen your spirit. Is that fair to say that that's what you're doing?
Yes, you're like, you know, you're strengthening your body. What you are is going to be what your spirit is. It's just like the religion even today. What you are on this earth is sending you to heaven. If you're a sinner, you're supposed to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
But our people, they believe there's only just the spirit world.
And people want to...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to kind of get a sense of how people saw that spirit world and what they saw, how their spirit was part of that spirit world. If it was... You're talking about the sense that we were all had spirits just the way the animals had spirits. That was the kind of oneness that you became a
yes.
part of. You saw
like everybody gave each other strength. Like we can talk, eh? We can converse with one another as human people, and the animals are supposed to be able to do that. And we have to converse with them. But I don't know, it's kind of hard for me to really explain it in the English.
Sure.
I can, when I talk with the elders, it seems so easy, but
yes.
to put it in a feeling that you can understand,
yeah.
it seems so hard.
I just don't want to misinterpret it.
No.
Maybe what I'll do is write some of it out, and then I'll give it to you and let you see what you think.
Would you?
I sure would.
I'm kind of interested to read those after you finish with it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, time flies.
Oh. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, it seems like we just got here and it's already 7.
That's the way it always
is. Yeah, goes. Really sorry that we got tied down and everything. That's the way my life is nowadays.
It's better to be busy than bored.
Weekend, I had to work all the weekend and I was so tired. I went home and all I did was lay asleep for half a day. And then back to work again. I don't know, I guess Bonnie and I, we just have to plug in away.
You have been listening to the wisdom of Dr. Mary Thomas in an interview with Don Sawyer. The recording was made over 30 years ago. We apologize for the quality of some parts.